Jimenez says that the two most famous groups in the Gemara were Bet Shammai and Bet Hillel. Family meaning the yeshiva, students of Shammai, Hazaken, the elder Shammai, and the students of Hillel. There was a continuous debate in halacha between these two yeshivot, Bet Shammai and Bet Hillel. And one item they argued about for 3 years straight. This question by which they argued was, which one of us is right all the time? Whenever there's a debate in halacha between two rabbis, each one is stating an opposite opinion of the other, only one is right. The question is, which one? Here, Bet Shammai and Bet Hillel for 3 years argued, each one maintaining that they are right. Until finally, how was this to be resolved? Finally, a voice came from heaven and stated clearly, both Bet Shammai and Bet Hillel are the words of Hashem. They are both heavenly, but the halacha, the law remains like Bet Hillel. Question is, if both are heavenly, why were Bet Hillel zoche, that in action, but poel, to be carried out, their words are to be carried out. Both are holy, both are heavenly, both are the words of Hashem, but which one is to be followed in action? The words of Bet Hillel. Why were they zoche more than Bet Shammai? This is a big zechut. The glory remains like them. Yimena answers because they were the type that were passive, kind, soft-spoken, without temper, and therefore they were zoche. They were modest. And what was the question in the first place? Isn't the rule always that we follow the majority? Which one of the two was the majority? We know that Bet Hillel were greater in number than Bet Shammai. So why should there have been a question in the first place, a controversy over this item? Majority should rule, which is Bet Hillel. The answer is, the question that arose here was, what majority do we follow? Majority of number or majority of quality, of wisdom? In other words, if you have two very wise men, old men very wise, and there is a debate between them, and four young men who are not that wise, which do we follow? A majority in age and wisdom, which means the two elder ones, or the fact that the four younger ones are not as wise, but they have the number over the elders? Meaning, of course, if they are all qualified judges in the court. Here, since this was the question, Bet Shammai said, we are sharper, we are wiser, we have sharper minds, and therefore, in quality, we are greater. Bet Hillel said, we are perhaps not as sharp, but we are greater in number. The voice came from heaven and said, glory may is like Bet Hillel. But why? Never mind the question of majority. Both are majorities. But the point is that Bet Hillel are modest, soft-spoken, and kind. Therefore, the law remains like them. They have that zechut. From this, we learn, the Gemara tells us, that any person who is modest, who humbles himself, the result is that heaven is going to elevate him and give him kavod. Any person who elevates himself, who seeks kavod, the kavod itself will flee from him. It will elude him. He will not be able to attain it. But therefore, because Bet Hillel was so modest and so humble, they were zochet to the greatest kavod possible. But the law remains like them at all times. This was the first major debate between them. Second item about which they argued, this machloket lasted for 2.5 years over one topic. Question arose, is it better for a person never to have been born, meaning that his soul remains in heaven, never to come down to earth, not to jeopardize himself in defiling the holiness of the soul by committing sins, or is it better that a person is to be born and take that risk to come down and to improve himself by performing mitzvot? This debate went on for 2.5 years. One side saying it's better not to be born, other side saying it's better to be born or created. Finally, they discussed it until they arrived at a conclusion. All finally agreed on this point. This was sort of a compromise agreement. It is decided that it is better for a person not to be created at all in the first place. But since he has no choice in the matter, now that a person is created, since he is born, since he is brought down to this world, he should search his deeds. He should go about to perfect them and to do his best to correct any misdeeds that he has done, any sins. Now that he, against his will, he is on this world, do his best to perfect any wrongs that he has done through Teshuvah and to strive for the performance of mitzvot. The Fadashim explained to make this question a little clearer. What is meant by better not to be born? Why would we say it's better not to be born? What logical reason is there behind this? After all, we see that there are tzaddikim who come to this world, and what a fine record they make for themselves. How much they gain? The answer is, mathematically, we can answer this question. The Torah is divided into two parts. The positive mitzvot commands 248 mitzvot aseh, and negative mitzvot 365 lot aseh, commands stating do not commit these sins. The 248 commands require action. The 365 require a person's inactivity, which means that if a person is not born, he automatically has these 365 to his credit, meaning not to his credit, but he is not breaking those rules. There's no possibility of breaking the 365 negative laws if he's not born. But he cannot perform the 248 active mitzvot if he's not born. If he is born, he stands the risk of breaking 365 laws by going against them, but he also has the gain of being able to perform the 248 mitzvot, which means that numerically, his chances are much higher than not being born, because he has the potential loss of 248, but nothing else. Whereas if he's born, he has the potential loss of 365 sins he could commit. Now, the decision was, though, it's better to be born and to search through his deeds. Search meaning to seek to perfect them. Not just the negative laws to avoid committing them. Because even, let's say, if he should fail in those 365 negative laws, if Chas V'Shalom should break them, he still stands a better chance by searching, meaning by doing the mitzvot with Kavanah. Well, there's a deep reason why he stands to gain. The Gemara tells us there is a fact that if a person thinks he intends to do a mitzvah, to perform a mitzvah, he gets credit just for the thought alone, for the kavanah alone. And then when he does the mitzvah, he gets additional credit for performing it. But if a person intends, chas v'shalom, to commit a sin, he does not get a sin for the thought until he actually commits the sin. Which means now that we have transformed, we have changed the number, the numerical value. Because now the negative laws are 365, they are stat, they remain 365. The positive laws now amount to twice 248. That's 496. 248 for the thought of doing the mitzvah, and 248 for the action in carrying it out. That since we now have the majority, in the active mitzvot, it is therefore better to be born, but to concentrate meaning in thought, literally in thought, planning, thinking about doing the mitzvah, because then you have double the amount of credit. So now your active mitzvot outnumber the negative mitzvot. And therefore, numerically, mathematically, it is worth being born. There is an advantage of being born. This was the final decision on the part of both Bet Shemesh and Bet Hillel. We must first explain a little better, a little clearer, this item we said about the voice that came from heaven and said that both Bet Shammai and Bet Hillel are both the words of Hashem. Both are the words of Hashem, meaning that both are right. And yet the law remains like only one of them. We mentioned many times before that this is one of the most difficult items for a person's mind to conceive. How can you have two directly opposite statements and both should be true? One rabbi says this thing is permissible. The other one argues and says, no, it's forbidden. One rabbi says this is kasher. The other says it's taref. How can you have both being true, the words of Hashem? Now, simply we explain that we cannot understand the depth of heaven. In heaven, it is possible to have two opposites and both are right. Just as the Pasuk says, Oseh Shalom b'Meamav, Hashem makes peace in heaven between two opposites. The word Shamayim means heaven. Heaven itself is two opposites. Shamayim comes from Ish and Mayim. Fire and water, these are two mortal enemies that can never live together. But yet in heaven, it is possible to have these two opposites merge together and form the heaven itself, Shamayim. Both being the words of Hashem, according to the Sefer Kabbalah, we have stated too that in heaven there are different characteristics. There is chesed, there is din, kindness, harshness of judgment. Both are the qualities of Hashem. We have two rabbis arguing, one on the mildest side, or liberal side, and one on the harshest side. One follows the midah, quality of chesed, the other follows the quality of din. Both are the qualities of Hashem. Both are truth. But to understand it more on our level, we must stress this point. What is meant actually by this is, the voice of heaven said, these and these are both the words of Hashem, meaning that basically both follow the command of Hashem. Basically, for example, when you have a machloket between the two rabbis, one of them says, on Shabbat, we are to use a certain kind of wax for Shabbat candles. The other says, this wax is forbidden. Basically, both are the word of Hashem, because there is no question, no doubt, no argument, the minds of either one, that candles must be lit on Shabbat. I agree 100% the basic rule. Question is only the detail, the minor detail. When the Mishnah says, Me'ematai, Korin et Shema be'arvit, or when do we say the Kriyat Shema for Arbit? Machloket, the debate at what time it starts, till what time you're allowed to say it? That's a detailed question. Basically, though, all opponents, in this case, agree 100% is the word of Hashem that we have to say Kriyat Shema for Arbit. There's no debate about that. So both are based upon the word of Hashem. There's a detail about which they debate, they argue, they discuss. But the main point is that the basis of Emunah, faith in the word of Hashem, is there. Now these details, of course, the Zohar HaKadosh says, is like all work upon preparing a garment for the king, and the tailors argue about which color belongs in which place, or which design. They all strive towards the main point, to see that the king's garments come out with the greatest beauty possible, and therefore all receive credit from Hashem for their striving. The king rewards everyone alike, whether he has proven right in the end or not. All have strived for a main central goal. So this is for our level to understand what's meant by the both being the word Hashem, both being 100% right, and both resulting in what each one wants, the final law, the final status of law for us to follow. Now the Gemara tells us too, that in these discussions between the rabbis and law, which is called rabbinic law, Torah Shebaal Peh, Elena says, don't ever think that these laws of the rabbis have, chas v'shalom, a lesser value than the laws of the Oraita, of the Torah, the written Torah, chas v'shalom, because Kohelet, in Kohelet it says, King Solomon says, and more than these, my son, more than what is written, beware of the endless seferim. Endless meaning Torah Shebaal Peh. There's no end to it. It's impossible ever to write the entire Torah Shebaal Peh. As much as we keep writing, there's always more explanations that we have more and more seferim printed in Rishonim and Achronim and commentaries, and then there's commentaries on the commentaries and so on. There's no possible end to it. So King Solomon said, beware more about this, these words of the rabbis, than of the official written Torah. Why? Because in the official written Torah, we have laws where if a person disobeys them, if he violates them, there are certain minor punishments or major punishments, 39 lashes, death penalty, or less than a death penalty in between. But if a person disobeys the laws of the rabbis, there's only one penalty and only one. That is a death penalty from heaven. So strict is it, so much stricter are their words, the fence they put up to protect the laws of the written Torah, that there is no compromise on their laws. Penalty is death. That's why the Gemara says, from a pasuk, that anyone who belittles, who mocks or belittles, the words of the rabbis, his penalty is, in Gehino, that he is boiled, he suffers not the burning of fire, but he is submerged and boiled in the worst type of filth, in waste matter, waste material. Rabbeinu Tenzel points out that who was the one that mocked the rabbis of the Gemara most? That was Haman. And therefore, heaven could not wait with Haman for the pleasure of dunking him in this boiling pot in Gehinnom. He even got a taste of it during his lifetime when he marched along leading the horse of the king with Mordechai upon it. He came under the balcony of his own home, his own castle, and his daughter took a barrel full of this waste matter and poured it out over him. He got bathed in this too during his lifetime. So serious is one who dares to belittle, to mock, to disbelieve in the words of the Gemara or the words of the rabbis. The Gemara says to show what respect is to be given to the words of the rabbis, to the laws of the Chachamim. Story about Rabbi Akiva, his last days when he was imprisoned by the Roman government. He had one of his students who came to serve him daily. Each day, Rabbi Yehoshua ben Hagarsi would come to bring him a pan of water. This water served a twofold purpose. One, to wash his hands with, the Tilat Yadayim. The second, to sustain himself, the drinking water. There was just barely enough for both. One day, Rabbi Yehoshua brought this pan of water with him, and the guard, prison guard, saw him. This prison guard was an evil, malicious type of person, and he stopped Rabbi Yehoshua and he said to him, you seem to have more water than usual today. Of course, this wasn't true, but he was that evil, he said it. Why do you bring more water? Because you want to undermine the prison? You want to dig your way out of it? Give it to me. He took the pan and poured out half of it. He gave Yeshua back half. Yeshua came to Rabbi Akiva with half of this pan full. Rabbi Akiva saw him. He said to him, why did you delay so much? Don't you know that I'm an old man? My life depends upon you. All I have is that which you bring me. Rabbi Yehoshua told him the entire story of what had happened. He felt very badly about it. Rabbi Akiva said to him, give me the water that remains, to wash my hands with, the Tilat Yadayim. Rabbi Yeshua stood aghast. He said, there's barely enough to drink. You want to wash your hands? Now is it time to wash your hands? It's a matter of your life, depending upon the water you drink to sustain yourself. Aren't you excused from the Tilat Yadayim now? Rabbi Akiva answered, what can I do? The law of the Tilat Yadayim is the law of the Chachamim, it's a rabbinic law, over which a person is chayav mitah. There's a death penalty for breaking that law. If I don't wash my hands, I have earned myself a death penalty. If I do wash my hands, and I die because of lack of water, drinking water, then I have died myself. But I have not committed a sin which gives me the sword of chiyuv mitah, death penalty. The Gemara says that he did not taste anything at all until Rabbi Yeshua finally, for all the possible effort, brought him additional water. When the rabbis, the Gemara, heard this, they said, imagine the purity of Rabbi Akiva. If in his old age, when he was so weak, he was so fiery in adhering to the mitzvot of the Torah, imagine what he was like when he was younger, when he had more physical ability, more strength. If in prison he is so strict with the laws, imagine how strict he was in his own home, where he was free, able to perform them. Now we come to an interesting question. Question is, in this case, Rabbi Akiva said, I would rather wash my hands than die because of lack of water, rather than drink the water, and to break the laws of the Rabbanan. This means sacrificing his life for it. Is this a mitzvah where a person must die for it? We know that all mitzvot of the Torah, except three, could be broken to save a person's life, even Shabbat and Kippur. Is a person who is not required, he's not required to die for this mitzvah, is one who is not required to die for a mitzvah. If he wants to be strict about it, he wants to die for it, is it permissible in this part, or is that considered the sin of suicide? Now, in this question, we have machloket. And Rambam says that when the Torah tells us that there are only three mitzvot where a person should die rather than to commit them, this means that any other mitzvah, a person is not permitted to sacrifice his life for them. There, the law is that he must break the law and save his life. If he doesn't, there's no mitzvah involved. It's committing a sin of suicide. That's, according to Rambam, the question is, how could Rabbi Akiva have said, I would rather die than to fail performing the mitzvah of the Tilat Yadayim, the law of the Rabbanan. According to other Mefarashim, other Rishonim, like the Shulchan Aruch itself, it says that a person does have the right. He wants to be so strict, so letter perfect, to performing the mitzvot, he has a full right to die for the sake of their performance. There is no sin involved. Person is that religious, he can go that far, it's permissible. But according to the Rambam, how could Rabbi Akiva have taken upon himself to die for a law where it's not required and where it's a sin for a person to die? The answer is that when does the Rambam say it's a sin? Only if it's a case of certainty, where if he doesn't do this mitzvah, where if he fails to abide by the law of break it rather than die, then he will surely die, then it's considered a sin. Where it's certain that it's either do the mitzvah or die, then he's not allowed to die rather than to break the law. But if there is a possible doubt, as in this case. It wasn't certain that Bikiva would die of thirst. In fact, proved later that water was brought. So it wasn't that certain in a case like this that Rambam Shu will agree that a person may be strict on this safek, and if, let us say, it turns out that there's no way to save him afterwards and he does die, there was no sin committed. Because at the time he did it, there was the possibility of not having to die for by obeying this law. Obeying it means to obey the laws of the Rabbanan, even though he was not required to, or any one of the laws aside from those three. But since this was the case, with Rabbi Akiva washing his hands rather than using the water for drinking, it was not a certainty he would die, but he was willing to die for it in case it would turn out to be no water. It was permissible in his part, and it showed his greatness, self-sacrifice for the sake of performing the mitzvot of the Rabbanan. Even this is further that the Pasuk, again in Shir HaShirim, the words of King Solomon, speaking about the Torah, he says, Shechorot Ke'orev, beauty of Torah, one who studies Torah, speaking about the person's hair, meaning the complementing the Chatan Kala, the marriage between Hashem and the Jews, through the Torah. The word Shechorot Ka'orev means black as a raven. The Gemara says this means that when can a person be sure of true study of Torah? Only when he fulfills this pasuk, Shechorot Ka'orev. Literally, it means black as a raven. But it could be translated also, Shechorot comes from the word Shachrit. Orev is Arbit. A person who studies Torah early in the morning, he gets up very late to study Torah, and he stays up late at night to study Torah, a person like that will be sure of absorbing and remembering the Torah. He'll succeed in the study of Torah. Yemeneh says, Ravaz said, there's another lesson here. After all, the words are Shechorot Ka'orev, which means that this too relates to the success of a person studying Torah. Person can succeed in the study of Torah only if Shechorot Ka'orev, Shechorot black, that a person adopts a attitude, the black attitude of a raven. A raven is an unusual bird. Every living being has pity upon its young, whether it's human, or lahavdil, animal, or bird. But a raven is an achzar, that means a sadist. It has no pity on its own young. A person, in order to succeed in the study of Torah, must be like a raven. If you really want to study Torah and succeed, you cannot afford to have pity on your family, because your family will say to you, we need you to go out and work for a living, provide for us, give us food, give us luxuries. A person who listens to his family will never have time then to really settle down and study Torah. He must be as a raven, disregard the cries of the family, and insist upon studying Torah. As to what happens later, he has to have bitachon. As, for example, the Gemara says that one rabbi decided to leave his home and go to the yeshiva to study Torah. His wife said to him, protested, said, what will your children do? What are they going to eat? You'll leave your family to starve? And he very calmly replied, go to the swamp. You'll find vegetation growing from the ground. They can live on that. Even that should suffice. But as long as there is a blade of grass left, I don't have to stay here and work. I would rather spend my time on the study of Torah. This way, the Vast said, a person can be sure of succeeding. Sounds like inhumanity. Sounds like cruelty. Actually, there's no greater kindness than this, because the result is that if a person is very sincere about sacrificing himself, his livelihood for the sake of Torah, result always is that the family does not starve if his sincerity is a genuine one. Nobody ever yet died because of the study of Torah. He will live, his family will live, but in the long run, who has made a wiser move? Who has deposited more in the future bank of heaven for eternal luxuries and reward? Naturally, the one that sacrifices part or all of this world's luxuries for the sake of the future world, where those luxuries are eternal. And just as too, the Rebbe says about the pasuk, "Asher anochi b'tzavcha hayom la'asotan." Hashem says, "These are the mitzvot which I command you today to carry out." The Rebbe says, "Today to carry out means that now, this is the time to carry it out today. Tomorrow is speaking about olam haba." This world is called Hayom today. Olam Haba is called Mechar tomorrow. Today you can carry them out. Tomorrow you receive reward. You cannot postpone the carrying them out for tomorrow. It is only in this world, during this lifetime, you can carry out mitzvot. A person delays, postpones, leaves it over, until after he passes away, he finds that he comes to the future world with nothing at all. There, as much as he begs and pleads for another chance to perform the mitzvot, it is too late. There it is impossible to do mitzvot. Impossible because hayom la'asotam, today only. There it is impossible to receive reward for anything done there. Reward in Olam Haba depends purely upon what a person has done during the today. But the reward of tomorrow depends upon the actions of today. The reward Olam Haba depend upon a person who is fought here. Therefore, the Gemara says that we find in the Pasuk that Hashem's kindness is infinite. Hashem's kindness is called Erech Apayim. Hashem controls his anger. He withholds his anger, he withholds punishment. The Gemara says, notice it says Erech Apayim. That's plural. He withholds his angers. Why plural? Because he withholds this both from Sadikim and from Rishayim. Meaning, and he withholds from Sadikim the reward until Olam Haba. Now, actually, the word Apayim means face. A face could be a face that smiles or a face that is angry. The face that smiles is one that is benign, it rewards. Face that is angry is one that meets out punishment. So Hashem holds back the face of a smile. He controls it, withholds it from a tzaddik. He does not smile to a tzaddik. He holds back the reward of a tzaddik so he can have his full reward complete in Olam Haba. Hashem holds back his anger from a rasha in this world so that what? He can have full punishment in Olam Haba? What kind of a gift is this? We say this is the kindness of Hashem. Would we call this kindness that Hashem holds back his anger from punishing at Asha here to give him so much more punishment in Olam Haba? This would be harshness rather than kindness. The answer is that this too is kindness. It is a kindness of Hashem that he holds back his anger from Asha, because if he would let this anger out, he would kill the Rasha. Killing him would mean the Rasha goes to Olam Haba as a Rasha. There he pays for his sins only. But Hashem holds back his anger, he controls the anger, and he gives the Rasha a longer life, additional life, additional opportunity to do teshuvah. This is kindness to a Rasha. Not to punish him yet. Of course, if the Rasha doesn't take advantage of this, naturally, anger is held until Olam Haba, where he's paid for it, he's punished for it. But this withholding his anger is an actual chesed, a pure kindness by Hashem to a rasha. He's being kind to him by not punishing him immediately. give them an additional chance because there are many cases where a person is in Asher. Years go by and suddenly he is aroused to do Teshuvah. If Hashem had punished him before, had killed him before, he would never have gotten this chance for Teshuvah. So this kindness of Hashem, not punishing him quickly or immediately, proves as a boon to the Asher, where he's able to return to Hashem, come back to the Derech HaYashar, the righteous path, through Teshuvah. Therefore, this Erech HaPayim is both of them are an act of kindness by Hashem. The Gemara says, a person should not eat raw onions, because in raw onions there lies a poisonous snake. This poisonous snake means the form is the core of the onion, which curls, looks like a snake. But this is actually poison. The Gemara says that Rabbi Hanina ben Dosa, one of the greatest tzaddikim of all times, who was so holy that when a person came to him to pray for anyone sick in his family, he would generally pray the person would be cured. And he would know through his own prayer whether the prayer had effected a cure or not. Rabbi Mendoza once ate half an onion. In that half, he ate half of this serpent that is called a serpent by the Gemara, this core. He became sick, so ill, that he fell on his deathbed. He was about to die. All the rabbis and the Gemara got together. They prayed for him, and he lived. He became cured because of the fact that he was so much needed by people then. His tefillot was so powerful. Helping others, he was so much needed that the rabbis were desperate. They put everything they could in his prayers to save his life. But of course, another translation of this word is because it was necessary. The moment was necessary, meaning it was necessary for others that needed him. Also, it was necessary for them to pray. Even though his prayers were so powerful that they could cure practically anyone, all who came to him for help, but his prayers could not help himself. A person who himself is in prison cannot release himself. He must have outside help, no matter how great he is. A tzaddik's zechut helps for others, not necessarily for himself. Point, though, is, we must point out once more, that this is an item that the Rabbeinu Zal stressed very strongly about not eating raw onions. And though we find that there are people who are lax in this, Rabbeinu Zal said this is an absolute warning. No matter what excuses they give, it is a fact that onions are dangerous, very seriously dangerous. Even those who say that it's a mitzvah and Shabbat to eat, and onions will not do harm, Rabbeinu said that is false. At no time are onions harmless. Anytime a person eats an onion, chas v'shalom, it can and would do harm. Unless they are cooked. You take a snake, put him into a pot, and boil him, that snake loses his fangs, his poison. Same thing with an onion, too. If an onion is boiled, it loses its potency, its poison, and then the onion can be eaten. Under no conditions should it be eaten, even if it is mixed, chopped together with other vegetables and so on. The Baal Shem HaKadosh also stated this, but it's noteworthy that this originates in the Gemara itself. The Gemara itself warned about the danger of onions, and Rabbeinu Zal said that this warning remained till this day, because there are many items in the Gemara where the Gemara says that nature, Joseph Fort says, nature has changed. Through the generations, nature of food has changed, the climate has changed, and therefore certain foods which at one time were healthy are unhealthy now, was the other way around, too. But this item of Benadryl said remained to this day. Onions are unhealthy, and by not eating onions, a person is performing two mitzvot. One, he is guarding his health. And two, he is obeying the words of the tzaddikim. Finally, the Gemara says, there are three items which cause a person to practically lose his mind, to sort of go against the will of Hashem. One is Avodah Zarah, person who associates with atheists, with kofrim, with koyim. This can make a person literally go against the will of Hashem, Chas V'Shalom. Second is an evil spirit, or better known as the Yesh Hara. Person loses his mind through a deep desire which is uncontrollable. And the third is abject poverty, extreme poverty. A person cannot think straight. Chas V'Shalom, he goes against the will of Hashem. The Gemara says, why does the Torah tell us this? To know that the cure for this is tefillah. Person, before he loses his mind, should pray, should sully very hard to Hashem to be saved, not just from these three, be saved from going against the will of Hashem. Now the Gemara says there are three other items that are also bad, but these items, is the advice of the Gemara is not to pray. He should be safe from them. The advice of the Gemara is that a person should accept them. May I have that? Accept this, these troubles, these difficulties with love. First one is extreme poverty. Again. But why before do we say pray? Now we say accept it. Reason is that before we say pray, not to be saved from it, but to be saved from losing your mind. Chas V'Shalom speaking against Hashem, complaining to Hashem in the wrong type of terms. Why? Because these three items the Gemara mentions now, three or more, there is a special reward for it. Reward for one who goes through one of these sufferings is that he will never see the entrance of Gehinnom. Many cases in the Gemara where the Gemara says a person by doing certain misfort will be saved from Gehinnom. Save means he might go into Gehinnom and be saved from there. Or he might come to Gehinnom and not be allowed in, safe from going in. Here's a case where he will never even come to the entrance of Gehinnom at all. He'll be completely free from getting there. One of these is extreme poverty. Second is one who suffers intestinal trouble, Chas V'Shalom. Stomach troubles and so on, ulcers. This means serious case continually. Third case is one who suffers from the government. The government harasses him with their court cases, with taxes, because they don't let up. Persons under their rule to an extent where his life is made unpeaceful. This a person should not pray to be rid of, but he should accept with Ahava, because the reward for this is so great that he will not see the entrance to Gehinnom. Gemara says that there is an additional item. One more item. One who has a wife who is very bad, a wife who makes him suffer, a wife who nags him, a wife who makes his life miserable, this person has insurance. He will never have to be taken out of Gehinnom, because he'll never get into it in the first place. So great is the suffering of a nagging wife that it covers all the possible Gehinnom a person would have to go through. And therefore, this too is excusable from seeing the entrance to Gehinnom. The Gemara says,